It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. A lot has been written about the city's tech center, from the innovative work being done at the universities to Google's opening an office in the city. The tech industry has established a foothold in Pittsburgh. However, a gap exists between the tech industry and disadvantaged neighborhoods. So how can the Steel City create ties between the tech sector and struggling communities? I'm joined now by Urban Innovation 21 CEO William Jenneret, who's looking to bridge that gap through advocacy. He's been appointed to the National Advisory Board on Innovation and Entrepreneurship to the Commerce Department, and he's with us now in Studio A. William Jenneret, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
And for our listeners who aren't familiar with Urban Innovation 21, tell us what you do.
Sure. We're a public-private partnership, a regional economic development organization that's working to make sure that all communities are connected to our region's economic prosperity. So we have some incentives to help tech and other innovation companies grow. But we work to sort of get them to grow in underserved communities. But we also run a very diverse internship program. We pay students from Point Park, Carlo, CCAC, and Duquesne to work for high-tech and high-growth companies so that they can get experience. And, you know, I'm excited that 50% of the interns are women and 60% are underrepresented minorities. And so we're, you know, working hard to give, diverse populations a chance to get engaged in the innovation economy.
Talk about the gap that exists. I mean, Pittsburgh is being known more and more for eds and meds, for the tech sector that that exists in this community that has been built up in the recent decades, the past two or three decades. But at the same time, you have places that you could call them tech deserts, where the STEM education is lacking, and there's this seems to be an extraordinary disconnect here.
Sure, sure. I mean, one thing, you know, we can't say enough about the work that we've done to actually transform our economy. I mean, it was phenomenal, but we still have a lot of work to do because you have communities that are thriving and doing well right next to communities that aren't doing well. And that cuts across race. I mean, two examples are, you know, the Hill District, which is between Oakland and downtown. I mean, two of our state's largest growth centers.
Right, right there on the cusp of where it's all happening, and yet it's not in. There hasn't been that kind of inclusion.
Yeah, you know, there's been some. That, you know, fortunately, you know, we've been in existence since 2007, and you do have a lot of stakeholders that have come together to do the very difficult work of making some of those connections occur. But another example is Sharpsburg. You know, Sharpsburg, located very close to Fox Chapel and O'Hare. But if you look at that community, the average salary is the same as the Hill District. And so, you know, those are just two examples of communities that aren't connected. But, you know, we see this throughout the region. And so it's really a problem that we have to do something about.
Why do you think that this problem exists?
It exists nationally. So you can go to any, you know, high growth cluster throughout the country. You can go to our nation's most successful, which is Silicon Valley, and you know, they have those disparities. You know, unfortunately, when steel was king, manufacturing was king, you had a lot of low skill, you know, high paying or at least decent jobs. And with innovation and tech, for the most part, that isn't the case. You can have a significant number of jobs, but in many cases, those jobs require a STEM background. I think, you know, like regions throughout the country, we're trying to catch up and trying to figure out creative ways to make that connection, trying to figure out creative ways to create, you know, really large companies that can employ a lot of people, because that's one of the challenges. I mean, sometimes with a tech, when you look at some of, you know, our biggest and best companies, they might scale it, you know, 70, 80 or 100 people. And that's good. But when you look at traditional manufacturing, look at steel mills, I mean, you had, you know, companies that had employed 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. And so, there's several challenges. And one thing we have to do is we can't put all the pressure on tech, because there are a whole lot of other, you know, high growth sectors, advanced manufacturing and others, where we also need to look at the job creation.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest is William Jenneret, CEO of Urban Innovation, which is looking to bridge the gap between the tech sector and struggling communities. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Again, our number 412-246-2002. You're quoted as saying, Bill, connecting all ethnicities to the tech economy has become not a social but an economic agenda. Why do you say that?
100%. By 2045, this country will be majority Latino and African Americans. And so in many of these high growth cluster regions, the majority of the population will be African American and Latinos. And so if they're not connected to the economy, then, that region's economy won't be strong. And so a prime example is our city. For all that we've done, and we've really done a lot, we're still an Act 47 city. And a large part of that is because we have large pockets of poverty, you know, in the city.
And, you know, we hear so much in this town about, trying to solve the problems. This fall, you were named to the National Advisory Board on Innovation and Entrepreneurship. What will this entail?
Very excited and honored to be asked to participate, on the advisory board. And we actually had our first meeting last week, and it's really excited because you have some of the best and brightest minds. And I was able to learn a lot, which I was excited about, but also able to participate. But what the Commerce Department and EDA are looking to do is to take some recommendations from the advisory board and actually implement them. And these aren't, recommendations that require legislation, but, you know, the recommendations that they can, you know, move forward with relatively quickly, because really only have 2 years before, you know, the term will change. And so they're just looking at some creative things that can be done to spur innovation and to make its impact broader and more inclusive.
And what would you like to see done to bridge the gap between the city's disadvantaged neighborhoods and the tech sector?
Several things. So, we have a great internship program. It's one of the largest sort of innovation-based internship programs in the region. It's one of the most diverse, I would say, in the country. But we're really giving students a chance. A lot of these are first-generation students that are really smart, that never thought that they could, participate in this new economy. I thought that it's all – the only jobs for them were maybe fast food, daycare, service jobs. And so exposing diverse populations, I think, is really important. Because the first step is you have to feel that you can actually participate in the economy. So I'd like to see, us be able to expand that. But more importantly, I'd like to see, regions throughout the country adopt programs, like that to expose kids. And then the next step is to make sure that they do get hired.
So a big part of this is young people not being aware of what's out there, not understanding that there's more available to them than just a job at a fast food restaurant, that they can break through that glass ceiling.
Definitely, definitely. And so we define innovation broadly. I mean, one of our biggest sponsors for our internship is UPMC, a health plan UPMC affiliates, because when we talk about this new economy, tech is part of it, but it's our healthcare system, which is really our region's largest employer, about 50,000 jobs. Then it's our universities, and just really letting folks sort of understand what this innovation economy is, and tech is one part of that. Really showing folks that there is a place for you in this economy, and if you're not connecting, you don't know, then it can be difficult, because it's not like it used to be where you know a family member or a friend necessarily who worked in the steel mill,
so right? You were connected to somebody that was working in the mills. It was hard work. A lot of people look back on that and say those were good jobs, but they were not necessarily jobs that you needed any particular higher education for. So it was merely word of mouth, and you knew the jobs were there, and it was a matter of going down and applying for them. Now, though, students need to be prepared,
correct,
for the jobs in the new economy. So, is there enough being done in terms of STEM education for young people, and not just young men, but women as well, to promote those educational opportunities to make sure that the workforce is trained and ready for those jobs as they come along?
There's a lot of good stuff being done. I think one of the big problems is figuring out how to scale the good stuff that's going on, because universities, have good programs. I mean, there are a lot of nonprofits like mine that have good problems. But what everybody really struggles with is, how do you scale a program? And again, this is a national problem. So, for example, love our internship program, and we do about 100 interns per year. I'd love to be able to do 1,000, 2,000. I mean, those are the type of numbers that we need to be able to do to really have the type of impact that we want to have. And so I think that's a challenge, because, we're seeing dwindling resources across the board.
Is it more about the number of internships, jobs, and training opportunities that are available, or about the number of young people who are available to fill those opportunities?
Sure.
Where is it sort of out of balance?
Sure. We definitely need to figure out ways to get kids exposed and on a STEM track early on.
So the openings are there. The jobs are there. It's a matter of letting the kids know that they're available and what they have to do to get there.
In some sectors. I think, nationally what we're seeing people really ask the hard questions about the jobs that are out there. I think we're fortunate to some degree, because we do have energy. The question with energy, though, becomes, who actually, is getting a lot of those jobs, but when you look at some of these sectors, we'll say technology, a company like AOL, when AOL was in its prime, it had 10,000 employees. Well, technology is such that you can have a company with 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 people that, creates a software would be very similar to what AOL created. And so we do have to, really figure out what the jobs of the future are, because technology, is actually creating fewer jobs.
What are some of the specific jobs being promoted in these in some of the communities where that are sort of trying to get caught up with the rest of the tech boom where it's flourishing?
Yeah, I mean, so again, it's two worlds. I mean, in a lot of the poor communities, the job growth is really seen in the service sector. And when I say the service sector, I'm talking about restaurants, daycare, some of the lower level healthcare positions, and across the country, we're seeing significant growth in that sector. And so, you know, sort of bridging the gap and making sure that connections made is something that's really important. You know, so an example is that, you know, when a lot of people think about a tech company, they don't realize it's a regular company. And so a regular company might have, you know, a tech company has, of course, tech people, but you also have administrative assistants, social media coordinators, lawyers, accountants, et cetera. And so just making sure that the folks that can get those jobs are actually connected to them.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest is William Jenneret, CEO of Urban Innovation, which is looking to bridge the gap between the tech sector and struggling communities. Again, we have time for your calls at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. The city of Pittsburgh has the highest poverty rate among working age African Americans of the nation's 40 largest metropolitan areas. That said, does Pittsburgh have an advantage when it comes to involving minorities in the tech sector?
I think we do. And the reason we do is because we actually have some very good and aggressive foundations that will oftentimes, I'm going to say, experiment and allow organizations like mine and others to do some very creative work. So oftentimes Pittsburgh is sort of the head of the curve in terms of doing work like this. So, for example, our organization is one of the first in the country that was, you know, set up to you know, work to connect, you know, high growth areas to underserved communities. And so we do have a strategic advantage. Because we're oftentimes the first to sort of get out there. You know, the challenge becomes, and again, this is a national challenge, is how do you scale the work so that it really creates that catalytic impact? Because if the work can't be scaled, then, you know, 5 years will pass, 10 years will pass, 15 years will pass, 20 years will pass, and we'll still be, you know, sitting here, you know, citing the same statistics. And so that's our big challenge. It's how do we scale, you know, whoever it's doing. I mean, how do we determine and scale the really good work that's being done? And as it relates to sort of African-American issues, African-American problems, we haven't figured out how to do that. And I will say that, you know, we have figured out how to do it with other things. You know, the heavy lift that we were able to do was to transform our economy. You know, we very easily could have looked like, you know, Youngstown or some other communities if, you know, we didn't, you know, create a public-private partnership that was really aggressive and, you know, sort of stayed the course for 30 years. You know, we're going to have to take that same approach if and this just isn't Pittsburgh. I mean, this, again, it's across the country. We're going to have to take that same type of approach if we're going to, you know, connect minorities and women to the new economy.
And so what can Pittsburgh offer the rest of the country then when it comes to economic inclusion? Because you talked about we've done the heavy lifting. You know, we managed to find a way to reinvent ourselves when other places didn't, to find something to replace the big generator in the economy, sure, which was the steel industry, you know, primarily. So now that we've solved that problem, you know, what can Pittsburgh offer the rest of the country when it comes to economic inclusion in terms of the progress we've made so far?
Well, you know, one of the good things is that other cities and regions can learn from us, and they can learn the really good things we did, and they can learn the things we didn't do so well. One of the things we didn't do so well was figure out how to include more people. And so I think one of the things that we're seeing is that in Detroit and some other places that are now, you know, really trying to do the heavy lifting to rebuild their economy, they're looking at it in a different way, and they're seeing inclusion, and, you know, it's not just racial inclusion, but inclusion of women, inclusion of poor white people. They're looking at that as being core to, you know, their strategy to rebuild their economy. And so that's one lesson that needs to be learned. I mean, we have to figure out how to incorporate more people, you know, from the beginning. It's very difficult. You have to be really creative in terms of how that's done. I think we've implemented some along with a lot of other partners and supporters, you know, some creative strategies that you know, we're sharing with other regions, so they can learn.
For example?
Well, for example, I think one of the very exciting things is that you know, we're working and we've been working with an organization called Pittsburgh Gateways from the beginning. Pittsburgh Gateways is the developer of the Energy Innovation Center, which used to be the Connolly Trade School. And what's exciting about that is that you're going to have corporations in the new economy that will have job training that will be for, you know, folks throughout the region. A lot of people in the Hill District are going to be able to participate so they can get the correct training to actually get the jobs that are available in the new economy. And it has the potential to be a model for the country. So it's really exciting. So that's an example.
Let's go to let's take a call from Carlana in Pittsburgh. Carlana, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with William Jenneret.
Hi. Well, I'd like to make a suggestion because I think the initial problem is talent search for finding students in the elementary schools who actually do have some facility with math and science. And I think a way of conducting sort of a talent search would be to conduct contests, like at least over a period of 5 years consistently, where the children would compete in contests, you know, whether it was a math contest or a science contest or a geography contest. The winners would be given a substantial either cash prize or maybe, you know, $100 worth of McDonald's gift certificates or, you know, I mean, there's different ways of thinking of incentives, but part of the problem is, and this is not just in the minority community, it goes across the board in middle to lower income families, is that they've lost hope. They don't see people being the connection between making good grades in elementary school and a person having a higher income as they grow older. And so if there were these little competitions with a very short-term immediate reward, it would also be a way of identifying those students who do have a facility with math, because if they had this incentive and were trying, then you would find out who, you know, had the capabilities for going further in science or math or whatever.
That's a good point, Carlana. And what about that, Bill?
I agree 100%. I mean, we do have to figure out the incentives, and we have to figure out how to, you know, when we do this, we have to figure out how to make sure that we're doing it in a way that allows all kids to participate and does it in a way that we're really going to engage kids. Because, you know, one of the problems is that oftentimes with, you know, STEM education is that, you know, it's very sort of middle class and male focused. And I'll give you an example. You know, there are a lot of women that are good in math early on but end up shying away from getting, you know, heavily engaged in STEM education, because a lot of the ways that we work to engage folks at early age in STEM, you know, don't take into account the particular needs of women. And so I agree with that. We just have to be very, very careful and deliberate about how we, you know, create those incentives in the education.
Thank you, Carlana, for the call. And unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want to thank our guest, William Jenneret, who is Urban Innovation 21 CEO. He has been appointed to the National Advisory Board on Innovation and Entrepreneurship for the Commerce Department. Bill Jenneret, thank you so much for being with us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, pop culture contributor Joe Woes looks at the history of scandals. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.